Absent members.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. The chaplain for today is Reverend Alan Losey from St. Andrew Lutheran Church in Eden Prairie, Minnesota. And after the prayer, please remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Let us pray. Dear God, as we gather again this day to conduct the business of our state, we ask your blessing upon those present who have been entrusted with that honorable task and are expected by all of us to carry it out with integrity and honesty, dedication and courage. Grant to each of our senators clarity of thought, wisdom, and discernment as they wrestle with the difficult issues we face. Undergird their efforts with compassionate hearts and a spirit of cooperation that leads to decisions that will benefit all Minnesotans. As a body, bestow upon our Senate your peace that passes understanding and the unity that can only come from recognition of our common humanity and the vision of a shared future in which all are affected by the destiny of each. We thank you for the gift of this day and ask that all that we do, all we say, and all we accomplish today might bring glory to you and prosperity to your people. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag,
one nation under God, indivisible.
Thank you very much. I've done that too. Secretary will take the roll.
Senators Bach, Benson, Bonhoff, Brown, Carlson, Chamberlain, Cohen, Dames, Daly, DeKreif, Dibble, Dietzick, Eaton, Fischbach, Gazelka, Gerlach, Gimsey, Godwin, Hall, Han, Harrington, Hayden, Higgins, Hoffman, Howe, Ingerbritzen, Jungbauer, Kielash, Koch, Cruz, Langseth, Latz, Lilly, Limmer, Laurie, Magnus, Marty, McGuire, Metzen, Michelle, Miller, Nelson, Newman, Nino, Olson, Ortman, Pappas, Perry, Peterson, Reinert, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Saxog, Senjum, Sharon, Siebenskoy, Sparkstump, Thompson, Tomasoni, Torres, Ray, Vanderveer, Wieger, Wolf.
A quorum is present. Members, it is very loud in here. If you have conversations, please take them off the floor. Move to the second order of business, executive and official communications. Please make note of them. They are printed on page one of today's Senate agenda. Moving to the fifth order of business. Reports of committees. Senator Senjum.
Madam President, I move that the committee reports be printed as printed on the agenda be adopted.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving to the sixth order of business, the second reading of Senate bills. There are several printed on page 9 of today's Senate agenda. Second reading of Senate bills. Seventh order of business, the second reading of House bills. There are several printed also on page 9, second reading. Moving to the eighth order of business, introduction and first reading of Senate bills. There is one change on today's Senate bill introductions. It is page 5. Senate file 2324 will be referred to the Committee on Commerce. First reading, and they will be referred as indicated. Moving to the ninth order of business, motions and resolutions. There are 9 authors' motions printed on today's Senate agenda. They will be taken as one motion. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Remaining under motions and resolutions, Senator Senjum.
Madam President, I move that Senate File 687 be withdrawn from the Committee on Taxes and re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services.
And Senator Senjum, that is your bill, and the author and the chairs have agreed.
Madam President, correct on both terms.
Thank you. On Senator Senjum's motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Remaining under motions and resolutions, Senator Thompson.
Madam President, I move that Senate File 1705 be withdrawn from the Committee on Jobs and Economic Growth and re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety.
And Senator Thompson, that is your bill, and both chairs have agreed.
Yes, Madam President.
Senator Thomasoni.
Madam President, could Senator Thompson tell us what this is?
Senator Thompson.
Yes, this is the constitutional amendment to employee freedom.
And Madam
Senator Thompson, or Senator Thomasoni.
And Madam President, this is obviously a jobs bill, and why is this being moved from one committee to another?
Senator Thompson.
Madam President, in discussion with the committee chairs, it was determined that this is the best venue for the broad range of issues to be heard on this bill.
Senator Thomasoni.
Madam President, right to work is a pretty important jobs legislation, and if it doesn't go through the jobs committee first, it seems to me we're not prioritizing our process here at the in the Senate, and we're trying to skirt the process. And I worry that when you don't go to the appropriate committee for a bill like this, that ultimately it misses a couple of the committees and ends up being on the Senate floor without doing the due process. This is a big potential change to the laws of the state of Minnesota and to the Constitution of the state of Minnesota, and for this to be taken lightly as can just be moved from one committee to another because the chair said it's okay is not an appropriate thing, I don't believe. We have had the right to work in Minnesota for many, many years because of the fact that, quite frankly, we have a priority on how important it is to pay workers and to make sure that workers have the right to organize, and when they organize, they understand what's going to happen. And members, in the state of Minnesota, we actually have higher average wage than other states. We have higher mean employment than other states that have right to work, and I call this bill the right to work for less. And so, Madam President and Senator Thompson, I object to this moving of this bill from jobs to commerce, and I don't think it should be approved. And I'm not sure, Madam Chair, does the body get to vote on this, or how does this work?
Yes, Senator Thomasoni, we do vote on Senator Thompson's motion.
And can we ask for a roll call on this also?
Yes.
And so, Madam President, I would ask for a roll call on this, and I would object strenuously to this. And I think that, members, when we create a process in this legislature, and the process is being attempted to be skirted, then we are not only not doing our jobs, but we are not allowing the state of Minnesota and the people of Minnesota to have the right to follow legislation as it should. And so I would object to this, Madam President.
Roll call has been requested. A roll call granted. Further discussion, Senator Latz.
Thank you, Madam President. Will Senator Michelle, the chair of the Jobs Committee, yield for a question?
Senator Latz, I don't believe he's on the floor right at this moment.
Madam President, it's a rather significant removal from the jurisdiction of the Jobs Committee. I'd ask if the sergeant would bring Senator Michelle to the floor so he can answer some questions about this motion before us.
Senator Latz, I'm sure he's nearby, and if staff could tell him that there's a question for him. Senator Latz, in the meantime, would you like us to move on? Because I think there are a couple other folks who would like to discuss this.
Well, Madam President, I will not relinquish the floor at this time, but I do have a question for Senator Limmer, the chair of Judiciary, as well. Will Senator Limmer yield? I see him on the floor.
Senator Limmer will yield. Senator Latz.
Madam President, Senator Limmer, would you please explain what the basis is for the Judiciary Committee's jurisdiction here and how it might be primary over that of the Jobs Committee?
Senator Limmer.
Madam President, Senator Latz, Judiciary Committee, as you know, is a committee that reviews most of the constitutional amendments that the legislature concerns itself with. This seems like an appropriate committee. It's even has you on the membership, Senator Latz. And it would be a good venue in order to review the essence of not only the bill, but some of the other side issues that may come as a result of other issues involving the specific law itself regarding this type of legislation.
Senator Latz.
Madam President, Senator Limmer, are there any particular provisions in the bill, other than the fact that it's a constitutional amendment, that would bring it within the Judiciary Committee's jurisdiction?
Senator Limmer.
Madam President, Senator Latz, we know that a right to organize, a right to be a member of a labor organization is a factor of law. The consequence of that membership and how that membership is included in the law, the effect of, at least in Minnesota, the question of whether a forced membership in a labor union is essentially in law itself right now. It's the practice of the state. There's a lot of legal issues that definitely would fit in the jurisdiction of the Judiciary Committee.
Madam President.
Senator Latz.
With all due respect, by that definition, every bill that is introduced in the Senate ought to go to the Judiciary Committee, since we are changing laws. Here, I still haven't heard of any particular provision within Senator Thompson's bill that would warrant Judiciary Committee jurisdiction, other than the fact that it's a constitutional amendment, and of course not all constitutional amendments go through judiciary either. But I do see Senator Michelle here on the floor. Perhaps he could yield.
Senator Limmer, I believe, would like to respond. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Latz, it's kind of interesting. You're raising the very same observation that most of the members are making right now, that they're concerned that most of the bills are coming through judiciary this particular session, and I'm getting a little flack for it. But needless to say, it's always been the custom of the Senate to take almost every single constitutional amendment and have it pass through Judiciary Committee. You've been on the Judiciary Committee for some time, and I'm sure you've seen that same observation as well. And it's also the simple question of, do we allow, and really the question of the bill itself is the question of whether we bring this issue to the public or not. Do they have a right to weigh in on this type of issue, or for that matter, any other issue? And that definitely is not only a point of law, it's a point of our Constitution that allows this question to be raised, discussed in an appropriate committee, and then move on in the event that it passes to the will of the people on this particular issue.
Senator Latz.
Madam President, even if there were some appropriate jurisdiction within judiciary, it seems to me the custom and practice of the Senate has been for the bill to originate in the committee that has the substantive jurisdiction over the content of the bill before it ends up in judiciary. We hear a lot of bills in judiciary because there's an enforcement provision which is three lines of a 30-page bill or something like that, and we think it's important at least to take a look at the enforcement provision, or there's some reference to the Office of Administrative Hearings or to lawsuits or attorney's fees or something like that. I haven't heard any description of the bill on the floor that is Senator Thompson's bill that has any of those kind of specific implications. So I guess the question still before the body is, why should this bill not be heard in its committee of primary jurisdiction, a labor bill, a jobs bill that is being proposed to be removed from the jobs committee that would ordinarily hear all of bills relating to questions of unionization and labor and jobs and economic development that are brought before this body. So I wonder if Senator Michelle could explain to the body why he's prepared to relinquish jurisdiction on a bill that is at its very core a jobs bill.
Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Madam President, members, and Senator Latz. I guess I'd look at this, respond in two ways. One, I think a big part of this is just traffic management. I would fully expect that a bill of this magnitude, a constitutional amendment indeed, would be make a number of stops in a number of different committees. I'd share with you the jobs committee is pretty full right now. We're scheduling extra hearings to meet the deadline. and our focus has been on tax relief and regulatory relief. We've got another extra committee scheduled for today, so part of it's traffic management, and another part again is my assumption that this will go to multiple committees. That's fine, and that's even, I guess I'd personally say that that's warranted. It should make a number of stops. So if Senator Limmer and your Judiciary Committee is ready to go, then let's go.
Senator Latz.
Well, Madam President, Judiciary Committee has already got a couple of extra meetings scheduled on days that we don't normally meet as well. And as Senator Limmer just stated, apparently there are an awful lot of bills coming through Judiciary that people might think are even unnecessary to do so. So it sounds like our traffic management is pretty full on Judiciary as well. This certainly would be a bill that would take up a substantial amount of time. And further, I'm unclear as to why. I mean, normally when Judiciary gets bills, unless the bill itself is a content related to specific topics that are within our committee's jurisdiction, they come from the committee of original jurisdiction that covers the substance of the bill, and we deal with the provision that's narrowly focused in our committee's jurisdiction. So again, I don't understand why, even from a traffic management standpoint, this would bypass jobs. It's just going to get clogged up in another part of the system. But I guess maybe I should ask this question of Senator Michelle. If this is just a traffic management provision, is Senator Michelle committing to the body that this bill, even if it does get removed from jobs right now, that it will, in fact, return to jobs before it comes to the floor? Does this body have Senator Michelle's commitment that is the will of the committee chair, that this bill, no matter what other route it takes, will go back through the Jobs Committee for consideration and a vote before it appears on the Senate floor?
Senator Michelle.
Madam President, Senator Latz, I'm not sure this is exactly what you're looking for. I'll continue to commit to the Jobs Committee members discussing this bill, the traffic management of this bill, working with leadership, working with the author of the bill, and watching what the House is doing as we hit committee deadlines. You kind of need to juggle all those variables.
Well, Madam President.
Senator Latz.
The only thing I didn't hear from the Jobs Committee chair was that he was specifically going to request that the bill be heard in his committee before it comes back to the floor. I can have discussions right here, right now on this floor with members of the Jobs Committee, but that doesn't accomplish the transparency that's inherent in our committee process for members of the public and for members of organizations that are interested in this and for purposes of the media that follow this. So I'd like to hear a commitment from Senator Michelle that he is requesting and will have this bill come back through the Jobs Committee to be heard in an open session of the Jobs Committee at a meeting before the matter is referred to the Senate floor for vote and consideration.
Senator Michelle.
Madam President, and Senator Latz, I'm not going to presuppose or presume what's going to happen in Judiciary, if indeed that happens, if there is a hearing. I'll watch it. We'll watch it, see how the testimony goes. Again, watch what else is going on. Watch what's going on in the House. I don't think it's necessary to commit or declare. There's going to be multiple committees that have an interest in or want to or maybe even want to commit. But I'll watch next week's hearing, if there is one, with interest.
Senator Latz.
Madam President, it sounds like the Jobs Committee is essentially relinquishing jurisdiction over a jobs bill. I think it's a bad precedent to be setting in this body as an institution for a bill that has at its core and in its breadth is quintessentially a bill that falls within the Jobs Committee's jurisdiction. And I think the members here ought to be very, very careful about setting this kind of a precedent, not only for today, but for the rest of the session, and also for the future of this institution. This is a dangerous precedent to set, just as a matter of process, no matter your position on the merits of the bill.
Senator Michelle.
Madam President, I apologize. There's probably nothing more exciting than a Latz and Michelle discussion, but I think it's a little old school, Madam President, to talk about relinquishing control. I mean, the committees, each of our committees doesn't own the bills in front of them. Again, this is a bill with some wide-ranging significance that touches a lot of committees. I'm not going to stand and prevent one specific committee from reviewing it. Again, as we're hitting deadlines, we will have to be more and more flexible, schedule more and more times. That's the nature of the process. But the Jobs Committee doesn't own this bill. And I think, in general, if we defer to the authors, other committee chairs work with them, I think that's what's going to keep the Senate working and then working well together. So just a final point, Madam President. Thank you.
Senator Marty.
Madam President, Senator Limmer is right that judiciary should see this bill, and I want to make sure we see it because I think it's appropriate to go there. But all of these bills don't start in judiciary when they're fundamentally other subject matters. And Senator Michelle, I've been hearing a lot about this bill from both the proponents and the opponents. I am surprised to hear you say you got traffic management problems and that this doesn't have the way to get your committee's time. I know the Health and Human Services Committee, we've met two nights already this week and so on, and I'm wondering why you can't just schedule a hearing on the bill. Why won't you schedule a hearing now and put this over priority for other things? I think that this is outrageous to be taking such a major issue and saying, well, we might hear it. We won't guarantee it. We're thinking about it. But this should go to judiciary after it does. We have a standard process where the substance of the bill is looked at first before we look at whether it's right to be in the constitutional amendment or whatever. Why can't you schedule a hearing tonight? Michelle, why can't you schedule a hearing on the bill tonight instead of, as he says, relinquishing control, I don't care what you call it. Why won't you schedule a hearing on it if it's that important?
Senator Michelle.
Madam President, Senator Marty knows we have a three-day committee meeting notice requirement, so it would be impossible to schedule a hearing for tonight. In fact, we have a hearing tonight on, or later this afternoon, on some legislation that Senator Scoy and I are carrying that are identical, trying to work with the administration, trying to work with the House. So in all due time, Senator Marty.
Madam President, Senator Michelle.
Senator Marty.
If you give notice today, you could have it Friday or Monday. And if it's a priority, I mean, I've seen lots of bills that have been scheduled a lot less than 3 days. But Senator Michelle, you know, if this is a priority, hear the bill. Hear the bill. It's a jobs bill, a jobs issue. You guys keep saying, Senator Thompson calls it a jobs-creating bill somehow. You know, this is a major concern for a lot of people. Median household income in the RTW states, $10,000 less per household than here. $46,000 household income in those states, $56,000 here. I don't think it's a good idea. I think it's a terrible one, but your committee should have a look at it. And not just, well, you'll talk with some committee members. I don't see why you can't schedule a hearing. Schedule it today, and you can have it Monday or Friday, whatever day. Well, today's Thursday. We have it Monday or Tuesday. I'm sorry, I forgot what day of the week it was. But schedule it right now if it's an important issue for you. It's your own caucus member pushing the bill. I don't mind it going to judiciary, but after your committee's taken a look at it. If you'll give us an ironclad guarantee that you're going to insist on it coming back for a hearing in your committee and a vote in your committee, fine. But otherwise, we shouldn't be wasting time of other committees if you're going to just put it off into a committee that has secondary or third-hand jurisdiction of the bill, skip your committees here. I can't see why you're doing this. Don't you have the votes?
I have been reminded by a member that it is important to address the president while we are having discussions. Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And will Senator Michelle yield, please?
Senator Michelle will yield. Senator Goodwin. Senator Michelle, could you give us a list of the bills that are coming to your committee or scheduled in your committee right now that have priority over this issue? Senator Michelle.
Sure, I'd be happy to provide Senator Goodwin with a list.
Senator Goodwin.
Well, Madam President and Senator Michelle, you should have that list before you. If you're talking, you should let everybody hear what's more important than this bill that has a huge effect on the working people of Minnesota. And I'd like to hear what even a few things of what you think have more of a priority for your committee than this particular bill. Because you're called the Jobs Committee, but what's going to happen with this bill is that people are going to be losing rights, losing pay, and are going to have a much tougher time in their jobs if they indeed do have them, because it'll be much easier to let people go if this becomes law. So I really want to know what is the priority. I think everybody in this body and the public would like to know the same thing. What has priority over this?
Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam President. It seems to me and something that is important is to understand what we attempt to accomplish in the committee process. And obviously, in my view, it's a couple of major things. One is making sure that the issues are properly vetted so that the people understand what bills are about, understand the nature and the content of
Madam
the bills.
Madam President, did I not have the floor still? Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that you had relinquished when Thompson stood up.
No, I did not, Madam Chair.
Well, then Senator Goodwin, Senator Thompson, as soon as Senator Goodwin's done.
One of the things I'm concerned about around here is sometimes the lack of public input that we get on a number of bills. As with last year, we ended up with over eight weeks of not hearing the budget because we were dealing with other issues that could have been dealt with this year, and we ended up sending the bills to the governor at the last minute. Now here we are saying that we aren't going to hear the bill in the committee that's the most important to hear it in. And if it's anything like judiciary was last year, we didn't end up being able to hear full testimony on a bill that would have made felons out of doctors, even though it had been through Health and Human Services before. Now we're gonna throw that kind of a sentence on a group of people in this state. We darn well better have good testimony from all parties on what that's going to do. So this is a bill that is very dangerous for the state of Minnesota, and I think very dangerous for the working people in Minnesota. And I think it's mislabeled as the right to work, and it's going to be really hard for
Madam
people
President,
to understand
point of order.
That. Pardon me?
For what purpose do you rise, Senator Gerlach?
Madam President, I believe the point of discussion we're on is about a re-referral. Senator Goodwin is debating the merits of the bill and not the re-referral.
Thank you for the reminder, Senator Gerlach. Senator Goodwin, please confine your remarks to the re-referral issue.
Thank you, Madam President, and I will. If this bill doesn't go before the Jobs Committee, there are a number of people and groups that will not have a good chance to testify on the effect on jobs. I'm quite sure, unless Senator Limmer agrees to hear, not just the people that may that a couple of people here and there, but agrees to have a full testimony by everybody that wants to testify on this bill in judiciary, just by chance that it doesn't go to jobs. It needs to go to jobs, and I think it's really inappropriate for us to think that this can be done without going to jobs and be really given a fair hearing in the Minnesota legislature. So vote no.
Senator Goodwin, are you done? May I call on someone else now? Thank you. Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam President. As I alluded to, it seems to me there are a couple of significant purposes for committee hearings. One is obviously to vet, talk about, and understand the bill. And the second is to make sure that the public has sufficient input. My experience in judiciary, both observing it from inside and from outside the Capitol, is that it tends to be a committee that does well vetting issues dealing with contracts and legal matters and constitutional matters. It has broad jurisdiction, and I believe that it is a proper committee for this to be heard in. And in terms of the public input, my experience has been that Senator Limmer has bent over backwards to allow various people, various groups, various experts in to testify on any matter before the committee. I fully intend to discuss the potential economic impact of the legislation, but obviously there are many other things that we need to get into. I don't have the least bit of concern that the public won't have an opportunity to learn about this and provide all of the input that they would like to provide in the Judiciary Committee. And I feel that that the public will in no way be shortchanged by going to this committee, which frankly at times delves in deeper and goes through a lot more than many of the committees here in the Capitol.
Senator Kielash.
Madam Chair, thanks for this. Senator Thompson and I have had discussions about this at different forums and talking about what this bill is going to do, and he has his point, I have my point. But one of the points that Senator Thompson has been making, and I would request that he yield for a question.
Would Senator Thompson yield? Yes, Senator Thompson will yield. Senator Kielash.
One of the points he's been making is that this is a jobs bill. This is going to improve the jobs in Minnesota, and that the economic development aspects of it are going to improve, and that this bill is really to help the workers of Minnesota. And this bill, like the voter ID bill, that, which went through the local government and elections committee, should be starting in the jobs committee, where it can get a full-blown hearing on the jobs aspect, not whether or not it should be a legal aspect in the Judiciary Committee. So, Senator Thompson, since you've been promoting this as a jobs bill, I question, can you give me the reason why you would circumvent the jobs committee on this and request that it go to the Judiciary Committee when, in fact, you've been proclaiming it as a jobs bill? And I'll have a follow-up after that.
Senator Thompson.
Yes, Madam President and Senator Kielash, certainly this bill has an economic impact. Nobody doubts that. It also has a significant impact for our rights as citizens to choose whether or not to belong to organizations and the like. The characterization that I have tried to avoid something, or I don't recall the exact word that Senator Kielash used, something to that effect, isn't the case. A discussion was had. It was believed that this is an appropriate venue for the legislation. The committee chairs agree, and certainly all of the issues, legal, economic, and otherwise, can be fully vetted, talked about, and testified to in Judiciary.
Senator Kielash.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I now request Senator Limmer yield for a question?
Senator Limmer will yield. Senator Kielash.
Senator Limmer, you and I sit on the Local Government and Elections Committee. We spent several hours listening to testimony about a constitutional amendment for voter ID at that time. We had lots of testimony. The testimony lasted into a couple of days. I suspect that the right to work is going to do the same for your Judiciary Committee, and you're already booked out a lot. You were one of the sponsors of some of the voter ID bills from last year, and we heard those in the proper committee, the Elections Committee, before they got sent to your committee. And I'm just questioning whether or not there's a different standard here for the various constitutional amendments. One goes to the committee that has oversight over elections and then moves to your committee, and now this one is going to your committee before going to the Jobs Committee. Seems like a double standard, Senator Limmer. Can you explain the difference in this bill to the voter ID bill for me? And the other thing is that are you intending to have a full-blown hearing where hours and hours of testimony can be heard in front of the Judiciary Committee, similar to the constitutional amendment on voter ID?
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Kielash, if you've ever been invited to the Judiciary Committee, I think you'll understand that we have a full-blown every committee on any bill. So. It's one of the unique blessings of being on a member of that committee. I don't think we'll treat this bill any less different than any other bill. and we'll get into the details of the bill, the ramifications, the potential consequences of the bill, and then we'll be making our decision. We'll certainly invite as much testimony as is required to make a decision, and I can promise you that. Madam President, Senator Kelash asked me to make some type of oration about the difference between the voter ID bill and this particular bill. They're not anywhere close to the same. So I'm not sure how far you want to go on the bill that I proposed that was reduced down from 400 pages to 85, but if you want me to go there, I can. But I maybe you could give me a little bit more specifics of what you want me to do in answering that question.
Senator Kelash? Yeah,
Madam Chair, my specific question is that we had testimony on the constitutional amendment for voter ID in the Local Government and Elections Committee, and we had a chance to do all the vetting there about the ramifications and heard from all the different testifiers about what's going to happen there before we sent it to your committee. This is a jobs bill. This is a constitutional amendment that's going to affect working folks in Minnesota. Why is this constitutional amendment different than the voter ID, photo ID bill that was in local government and elections, in that shouldn't it be vetted by the people that are most effective in the committee that has the best jurisdiction over that prior to coming to your committees, just like the voter ID bill did?
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Kelash, once I get involved in the analysis of this particular bill, if the chamber decides to advance it to the Judiciary Committee, I could probably answer that a little more in detail for you. And there's always the option of moving it to another committee after Judiciary if it happens to pass. I think we're a little premature on the discussion. The only thing I can assure you is that if this body decides to advance this to the Judiciary Committee, it will be given a fair hearing, and then we'll make the decision on where we re-refer it.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam President. I just wanted to clarify a couple of issues. A couple of weeks ago, I serve in the Jobs Committee, and it was clear to committee members that we did have ample opportunity to bring our bills before the committee. And Senator Michelle made it very clear to us that we could bring bills because we did have an open agenda, and we only have two bills for tonight as a result of the funeral yesterday. So it is clear and it's on the record that we have had ample opportunity to have a hearing on this bill, and that the traffic argument, in my view, is just really not, it doesn't really play any relevance here. The second point, Madam Chair, is that I really don't understand quite well what the strategy of the majority is here, but I want to clarify for the audience that we have the discussion for this bill relate to employment, labor organizing, dues and fees, conditions of employment, and forms of compensation. My guess is that the judiciary is going to say this is not relevant to our committee because this is about constitutional amendment. Therefore, the argument that the author presents today about really having an opportunity to have a thorough review of this bill is really inappropriate, because the issues that we need to discuss are really related to jobs and employment, which is not the jurisdiction of judiciary. So what I'm sensing here is that we are not, or that the majority does not intend to have a thorough review on the issues that are relevant, such as employment, labor, conditions of employment, and forms of compensation, but just on the constitutional amendment language. And I really think that the public ought to know that. Thank you, Madam President.
Senator Metzen.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Torres-Ray is right on. 98.5% of this bill is jobs jurisdiction. and the discussion should and must take place in the Jobs Committee. And why you're circumventing that, I don't know, Senator Michelle. I'm very disappointed with you in relinquishing the rights of the Policy Committee. That's where the discussion should take place. And when I've been here a while, and what we, somebody said it earlier, that we hear the policy stuff, and then if it has to go to judiciary, it does. That's the way it works, and it has worked very fine for years. And why you're giving up the jurisdiction in the committee I'm on, I don't know. And if we need a little time, I could round up the Democrats on the committee and make sure that they will show up, but I know they will. So let's find the time and do it the right way. I think we're going down the wrong path here, and if we continue to do this, it's a terrible slippery slope. So, my friend Michelle, you shouldn't have given up our authority. This is where it should be heard, in your committee.
Senator Latz.
Madam President, I think Senator Limmer had better plan on giving up any right to claim that he can't hear any members' bills this year because of lack of committee time, if he's taken this bill ahead of a lot of other things. So whatever other explanation he gives for telling people he doesn't have, he's not going to hear their bill, I think if he is willing to accept jurisdiction of this bill as its primary committee, he better plan on finding some other excuse for not hearing bills. I do want to note, and by the way, we probably ought to schedule another meeting in the next week and a half. To do that, we've already got scheduled extended time on the next two Thursdays and Fridays when we don't normally have time scheduled for almost full day hearings. We better plan on taking at least a half a day out of there or add a half a day to hear this bill. If we're going to be the first committee, then we're going to have full-blown testimony, I expect, on the merits of the bill, and it's going to take a long, long time. But I do have one point I want to note for the floor here as well. I've got the committee schedules up on my laptop right now, and I see that Jobs and Economic Growth has a meeting scheduled today with two bills on the agenda. I don't know much about the substance of the bills, except one of them specifies that they're only going to deal with Article 3 on sales and use taxes and not on the rest of the bill. So apparently the Jobs Committee is focusing more narrowly on the part of that bill that is within its jurisdiction. But what perplexes me is that I don't see any committee on the agenda, on the schedule for next week, either on Tuesday or Wednesday, when they are regularly scheduled. I see a lot of other committees here, and they don't have an agenda on there. They just say agenda to be announced. But right now, I don't even see the Jobs Committee on the schedule for next week on Tuesday morning or on Wednesday morning. So maybe they've got lots of time, or maybe their calendar is still fluid and they're still juggling priorities. Well, if this constitutional amendment is, in fact, a priority of the majority in this body, then this ought to be a priority on the jobs agenda, on the committee's agenda. And apparently it's not. Not only because of the chair's willingness to give up jurisdiction over it, but also in the fact that the committee's not even scheduled for next week.
Senator Nino.
Thank you, Madam President. I have a parliamentary inquiry.
State your point.
Madam President, I just want to clarify the motion. Is the motion to move this bill from, I believe, the Jobs Committee to the Judiciary Committee? Is that correct?
Yes, it is. The motion is to withdraw from the Committee on Jobs and Economic Growth and re-refer to the Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety.
Another inquiry, Madam President.
State your inquiry.
Madam President, does that motion preclude this bill from being heard in any committee at all, other than judiciary?
No, it would not, Senator Nino.
Another parliamentary inquiry, Madam President.
Certainly.
Does a vote on this motion, either yay or nay, is that indicative of anything other than moving the bill from one committee to the other? In other words, is this vote on the merits of the bill or simply on the procedural moving of the paperwork from one committee to another?
This motion is simply the motion to re-refer.
Thank you, Madam President.
Further discussion, Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Madam President. I have four bills that have been referred to the Judiciary Committee and haven't received a hearing on any of them last year or this year. But now this bill is going to get referred to Judiciary and take priority over other things when I happen to think that my bills would be better good public policy for the state of Minnesota. I think this is a wrong-headed move. The Jobs Committee should deal with jobs things, and when it gets done, if it gets out of that committee with a positive vote, then it can go to Judiciary and any other committees involved. But it's important for our body to work things through in the right order, in the right place.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. I just simply had to respond to a fair question from Senator Nienow, but I would just remind folks, if I heard Senator Latz's inquiry of the chair of the Jobs Committee earlier, there was a commitment to keep an eye on things, but no commitment to actually make sure that that bill is thoroughly discussed, debated, and vetted on the issues that pertain to jobs. So in casting this vote with some sort of a assumption or implication or assurance that this is actually going to go to the committee in which it really properly resides and needs its hearing is not a vote that would be well advised, because it would feel like, it would appear that we're going to look at it from a distance and observe it across the building from the Jobs Committee, but we're not going to see it actually in that hearing room. That's what it feels like to me, because there's a complete unwillingness to commit to actually having that bill heard and vetted and thoroughly discussed in the committee where it has proper jurisdiction.
Senator Marty.
Madam President, what I don't get in your discussion with Senator Nienow is the whole reason we're told this should happen is for traffic management considerations in Senator Michelle's committee. And again, I was looking before when you talked how busy you are and didn't see a single bill scheduled for next week. And that gives you a perfect opportunity, because Thursday is usually the day people schedule all their bills for the next week. You could hear the bill. We've been in session for a month or two, and I've heard a lot about this bill. But it's not a priority for you, and you won't say whether you'll take it back or anything else. Why won't you take it now and just hear it there instead of spending more time arguing about why you can't hear it? Because you're putting it to another committee. Senator Limmer's committee's got plenty of bills to hear. I'll be there for the hearing. But I don't see why we're taking out of the committee that's supposed to hear the bill for your traffic concerns when you don't have any bills scheduled next week. Hear this bill, and then you can send it to Senator Limmer's committee.
Senator Michelle.
Just because Senator Marty's made that a pretty pointed inquiry, I am told by committee staff that we will have at least two, if not three, very full committee schedules for next week. It hasn't been posted yet, Senator Marty, but as you know, Thursday is the day that you typically post those. And again, I think you're making a little much of this, Senator Marty, and I very much appreciate Senator Metzen's counsel. This is the first time Senator Metzen has ever said, hear this bill. I mean, I want to be clear on that. The ranking minority member has never said, let's hear this bill in jobs. So I heard it very strongly today, and we'll keep talking about that, Senator Metzen. But again, Senator Newman, just as an example, Senator Newman, I think, is about to hit his fourth different committee with his constitutional amendment. There are a lot of committees that are going to need to look at these kind of proposals. So the order of the committees, does it really matter that much? No. I think in the end what matters is, as some members have pointed out, have people had a chance to testify? Has it been fully vetted? Has it been properly noticed? You can't just throw on a hearing for this afternoon. We got to give people notice. So support the motion. Thank you, Madam President.
Senator Marty.
Madam President, Senator Michelle, I don't think any of us want, Senator Metzen, myself, lots of others, don't want this bill to move. We think it's a terrible bill. We're only saying that rather than push it off your committee, for what you're saying is time management or traffic management or whatever, and it's got to go to a lot of committees, then commit to hearing the bill if it passes out of judiciary. Commit to hearing the bill in your committee and demanding it come back. In effect, you're just pushing it out. I don't know. Maybe you don't have the votes in your committee. I don't know what the issue is, why you won't hear the bill if your own team and you seem to be a supporter of this. I'm just saying that you could avoid all this problem. I think there'd be a lot less opposition if you'd commit to making sure that this bill has to pass through your committee at some point in the process, and you're not willing to do that, which makes us all suspicious about why you're trying to pull it out of the committee that ought to be the first one to hear the bill.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. Also in support of Senator Higgins' point about traffic management and prioritization of bills. I have six bills that have been referred to the Judiciary Committee, three last year, three this year, all three with hearing requests to the chair of the Judiciary Committee, all six of which are brilliant ideas which should be considered by the Judiciary Committee and passed to the floor of the Senate and passed into law because they're excellent, excellent public policy proposals, none of which have received a public hearing in the Judiciary Committee. So if we're talking about priorities and ordering public policy issues and traffic management and that sort of thing, I would just put that out in front of the chamber here that, we're wondering what we're actually dealing with when we're hearing these arguments about traffic management and trying to sort out the order of bill hearings.
Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam President. During my time here, the custom of the Senate has always been that the last stop for constitutional amendments before they come to the floor of the Senate has always been the Senate Rules Committee. And that happened last year with the constitutional amendment that's already been sent to the ballot. The last stop I remember was on a Friday with Senator Limmer's constitutional amendment in the Rules Committee. That has been the custom of the Senate. I guess I'd like Senator Senjum to yield for a question on that subject.
Senator Bach, I would yield.
Senator Senjum.
Madam President, Senator Senjum, I know you were visiting with another member, but the custom of the Senate has always been the last stop for constitutional amendments after they've gone through their committees of jurisdiction is the Senate Rules Committee. And Senator Senjum, I would just like you to tell the body what the intent of leadership is relative to this and other constitutional amendments. Will they, as they have in the past, come through the Senate Rules Committee before they come to the floor? And it would help give, I think, Senator Limmer some direction in the event Senator Michelle doesn't feel a need to hear the bill.
Senator Senjum.
Madam President, members, the traditions and customs of this body have been in the normal flow of bills that they would come through the Rules Committee. There are people here that have been here much longer than I have, but I would dare say there are very few, if maybe any, bills that haven't gone that direction. I could certainly give you no examples of a constitutional amendment that has not gone through the Rules Committee. So that is the flow of our bills. That is our custom, and I would expect that would be the case here.
Further discussion on the motion to re-refer. Roll call has been requested. The Secretary will take the roll on the Thompson motion to re-refer.
Madam President, point of order.
Senator Latz.
Are we not in the middle of a roll call?
Yes, we are.
Madam Chair, I see quite a few members conferring amongst themselves in little huddles. It looks to me that's contravention of the rules of the Senate during a roll call, if it has anything to do at all with the vote that's on the board.
Thank you, Senator Latz. Thank you for the reminder.
Point of order.
Senator Latz.
Madam President, I think members are supposed to be at their desk during the roll call. I just saw two senators in the aisle over here conferring immediately after I made my last point, Madam President. I'd ask that the President enforce the order of the Senate.
Senator Latz, I believe they've returned to their seats.
Madam President?
Senator Goodwin?
Why are we not closing the roll?
Senator Goodwin, we will be closing the roll eventually. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 34 ayes and 30 nays, the motion does prevail. Remaining under motions and resolutions, Senator Harrington.
Madam President,
I move that Senate File 1520 be withdrawn from the Committee on Local Governments and Election and referred to the Committee on Taxes. I am the author.
Senator Harrington, that is your bill, and the chairs have agreed.
Say again?
That is your bill, and the chairs have agreed to the change.
It is my bill, and my understanding is that chairs have agreed.
Thank you, Senator Harrington. On Senator Harrington's motion to withdraw Senate File 1520 from the Committee on Local Government Elections and re-refer to taxes, all those in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Chamberlain.
Madam President, I move that Senate File 2127 be withdrawn from the Committee on Local Government and Elections and re-referred to the Committee on Commerce and Consumer Protection.
And Senator Chamberlain, that is your bill, and the chairs have agreed.
Yes, Madam President.
Senator Chamberlain moves that Senate File 2127 be withdrawn from the Committee on Local Government and Elections and be referred to the Committee on Commerce and Consumer Protection. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. The Senate Resolution number 132, printed on page 9, will be referred to Rules. Senator Senjum.
Madam President, pursuant to Rule 26, I designate that Senate File 1567, number 2 on general orders, be made a special order for immediate consideration.
Senator Senjum has designated Senate File 1567 as a special order. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President and members. Senate File 1567 is a continuance, if you will, off of House File number 1, permitting bill last year, if you all remember. But a lot of work has gone into this from our committee. Madam President and members, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity today to present this file, a bill that continues the reforms and streamlining of the environment review and permitting system that we started last year. If you recall, last year, on a bipartisan basis, the legislature passed House File number 1, which contains provisions that streamline the environmental permitting and review process, added increased efficiencies, deleted some overlap and duplication of rules and regulations, which saved time, cost, and added certainty to the permitting and review process in the state of Minnesota. We've heard from businesses across the state that House File number 1 last year created jobs and streamlined the permitting, and it was a success. In fact, we had members from the administration responding to questions from the PCA that said that he was very convinced that House File 1 last year that this body passed, along with the governor, did actually and is actually creating jobs quicker in Minnesota. So that's something that this whole body can be very proud of. This year again, we identified areas that can be streamlined, increased efficiencies, remove duplication and overlap, and bring into the 21st century the regulatory process in Minnesota. I've met with the governor, Commissioner Ozen, and Commissioner Lanware to address concerns the administration had regarding this bill, and I believe that we have put together a bipartisan bill that will create a better economic climate and provide more jobs for the state of Minnesota. As companies look to expand in this international economy, one of the areas they review besides taxes, energy costs, and workforce is how long it will take to obtain a permit for their expansion or building for the new facility. This legislation will alleviate many of the concerns in this area while still ensuring our environment is protected for future generations. Members, there's no silver bullet out there, but as the governor and the PCA commissioner have stated before, they would like to have state agencies, and I think we all agree, the state agencies operate at the speed of commerce. These changes will create jobs and foster economic development while protecting the public health and environment and natural resources of the state. Madam President, members, I'll just jump right into Senate File 1567 here. The Section 1 pertains to this section is clarifying the language from a provision passed last year that dealt with notification on whether permit applications are substantially complete or not when the clocks on the 150 goal day timeline begins. This clarifies that when the application is submitted, the clock actually begins. Additionally, at the request of the agencies, this section eliminates the requirement that the reports identify steps taken to complete action and timelines for rejected permits. This is because that information is oftentimes not available. This section is for the DNR and will appear later on for the PCA. Section 2, members, this language allows DNR permit holders to have a permit or have applied for a permit to continue to operate during the suspension of government services as long as they abide by all the rules, regulations, and stipulations in the existing permit. Section 3 is a provision that amends the language from conservation structure in local water supply plans. Section 4 changes the SDS permits for feedlots from 5 years to 10 years. Section 5 contains a 150-day goal clarifying language for the PCA, as well as the deletion and the reporting requirements mentioned earlier. Additionally, allows an option of a project proposer to contract with a permit applicant professional who is registered with the state and has at least 10 years experience in the subject matter of the application, whether it be air, water, or storage tanks, and after a pre-application meeting with the PCA to draft a preliminary application that will be reviewed by the PCA and will be deemed approved unless the PCA deems contrary to statute or rule. In other words, the PCA state agencies have the final say. Additionally, this section contains the same language contained in the previous DNR statute, allowing a facility that has a PCA permit to operate during the suspension of government services as long as they abide by all the rules, regulations, and stipulations contained in the permit. Section 6, last year facilities that required a water permit were allowed to begin construction of the facility but not allowed to discharge from that facility where federal law allowed. This would allow the same for facilities that require an air permit. Emissions would not be allowed. Section 7 through 12 are definitions directly related to Section 12. Section 12 creates an environmental permit coordinator. This would be an option. Members, this is an option for project proposers. This is not required. The governor created a mining permit coordinator, and this coordinator is similar but will be available to all industries in the state, including agriculture, energy, forestry, manufacturing, and biofuels. Would work in this person would work in coordination with the governor's Minnesota Business First Stop project. Project proposer would pay for the environmental permit coordinator, so that it'd be at no cost to the state. Article 2, Section 1. Section 1 is something that was of interest to certainly of Senator Saxhog. It adds wood to the definition of cellulosic biofuels. Section 2 adds biobutanol and cellulosic biofuel facilities to the exemption that was passed last year for ethanol facilities. Must produce less than 125 million gallons and be located outside the 7-county metro area, so it's a rural issue. Section 3, governor issued an executive order on 12-32 asking the EQB to look at efforts to evaluate environmental review and permitting rules and regulations and make recommendations. We just codified that language for the EQB and asked for a report on December 1st. Some of the environmental rules and regulations were drafted in the 70s, and we hope that the report will contain some recommendations to remove duplicative and obsolete categories. Members, that's kind of that's the bill in its quickest description and form here. I should also note that on your desk you should have, with my name in the corner, a document from the Minnesota Chamber listing the agencies that are definitely in support of this. And again, I have to also reiterate that we've been working very closely and I have met personally with the governor and the agency commissioners, moving this bill forward, and we've had tremendous cooperation between the agencies as well as the administration in wanting to get this done. So members, with that, I do have an amendment that I'd like to offer at this time. It's the A-10 amendment.
Senator Ingebrigtsen offers the A-10 amendment. Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Ingebrigtsen moves to amend Senate file number 1567 as follows. Page 4, line 36, delete. This is the A-10 amendment.
To that amendment, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, the A-10 amendment, as describes, adds additional requirements that all the permit professionals must abide by the duty of candor and all requirements of Chapter 326 Engineering Licensure in Minnesota. I do have a statutorily description of what candor means, if those who may not know. The duty of candor is a very large number here, 7,000.0300. In all formal and informal negotiations, communications, proceedings, and other dealings with any person and any member, employee, or agent of the Board of Commissioner, it shall be the duty of each person and each member, employee, or agent of the Board of Commissioner to act in good faith and with complete truthfulness, accuracy, disclosure, and candor. The next part of the amendment addresses and removes the clearly erroneous language regarding permit applications as requested by the agency. There were some concerns about that in the committee, so that would be removing that. Language in section 1.8 of the bill, language requested by the Department of Employment and Economic Employment Development, the deed in regards to the permit coordinator position that clarifies this position will work in coordination with the Minnesota Business First Stop, which is a governor's program. And 1.13 is a technical deleting, and it says and repeal. I'll stand for any questions.
Further discussion, Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, I've got to tell you, I think permitting reform is the most significant work we've done here to help grow jobs in Minnesota. Perhaps more than 5 years of waiting to have a permit approved to expand our mining operations in northeast Minnesota is just a bit too long. So members, this bill, as well as House File 1 last year, it doesn't take away from our duty to make sure that we protect our environment. But what it does do is cut the red tape for the businesses that we want coming here and growing their businesses here. It cuts the red tape and allows them to move forward in a faster fashion. So I rise in support of this. Senator Ingebrigtsen, I think you've done a fantastic job, as well as your work on House File 1 last year.
Further discussion on the A-10 amendment? Hearing none, all in favor of the A-10 amendment, signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Amendment prevails. Further discussion on Senate File 1567. Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have the A-13 amendment.
Senator Bach offers the A-13 amendment. Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Bach moves to amend Senate File 1567 as follows. Page 14 after line 3, insert. This is the A-13 amendment.
To the amendment, Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. We did some good work last year on permitting. The governor did some very good work with his executive order early in the session last year. And this amendment is going to provide the opportunity for an expansion of a manufacturing facility in the Iron Range that will add hundreds of jobs in Minnesota. It creates, and Senator Saxog has put a lot of work into this. This plant is actually in his district. But it creates a pilot program for an alternative form of environmental review. What he has in his district, and he's worked this out with DNR and MPCA, this is language that they have proposed, it creates a streamlined EIS process. It's crafted very narrowly so that it only applies in areas of the state that are subject to federal class 1 air requirements, and those are the kind of federal requirements that apply for areas adjacent to the Boundary Waters Canoe Area or Voyageurs National Park. So it's very narrowly crafted, allows up to three projects that could use this expedited process, and they would have to have gone into the environmental review process by January 1, 2014. And then on the back end of it, it requires a report to the Environment Quality Board on the part of the agencies as to how the project was worked relative to the environment and permitting. This could trim as much as a year off of the permitting for a manufacturing type project on the Iron Range that just happens to fit into a mining project, even though it's not really mining, it's a reclamation of existing tailings basins. So it really is more of a manufacturing plant than a mining plant, and members, I'd appreciate your support.
Further discussion on the A13, Senator Saxhog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, and I rise to support the A13 amendment. 4 years ago, UPM Blanton, the big paper company up in Grand Rapids, proposed building a new world-class paper machine and applied for the permitting and went into the permitting process. It was non-controversial. They were recycling their water. There was no particular air problems, and the GIS showed that there was plenty of wood available. Our problem here was that it took 2 years, and Blanton and UPM, the Finnish company, was not willing to wait that long. And so this new proposed pilot project, I believe, would have made that project as well as the one that Senator Bach's referring to very viable. And so that basically in certain instances we're speeding up the permitting process. I think this is a good bill. It's a good jobs bill. This would be a good amendment to it, and I would ask for your support. Thank you.
Further discussion on the A13 amendment? All those in favor of the A13 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Amendment prevails. Further discussion on Senate File 1567. Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have an A11 amendment.
Senator Tomasoni offers the A11 amendment. Secretary will report the amendment.
The A11. Yep. Senator Tomasoni moves to amend Senate File 1567 as follows. This is the A11 amendment.
To the amendment, Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Mr. President. members, the purpose of this amendment is to provide for additional coordination between the environmental impact statement and the permitting process. As you all know, current law requires that the responsible government unit for the environmental impact statement ensures coordination between the environmental review and the environmental permitting. Current law also requires that information needed by a government unit for making permit decisions and other actions be developed in conjunction with the EIS. The proposed language provides the opportunity for additional coordination between the EIS and permitting by allowing agencies to consolidate any administrative hearings that might be required before permits are issued for the project. The new language that would be added to the current provision requires avoiding duplication and ensuring coordination between environmental review and environmental permitting, and any project requiring preparation of an EIS often also requires issuance of permits from multiple state agencies. The permit approval process for many state agencies includes the MPCA and the DNR, include the possibility of hearings before an administrative officer. And the new language would allow the agencies to hold a consolidated hearing if requested by a project proposer. Members, what this does is it just allows all of those agencies that might be involved in the permitting process to have the administrative hearing at the same time as opposed to having six or seven different ones over a long period of time. It doesn't do anything to try and get around any of the current laws. I appreciate your support.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I rise in support of the A11 amendment.
Further discussion on the A11 amendment. Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Amendment prevails. Senator Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. President. I rise to offer the 812 amendment to...
Senator Magnus offers the A-12 amendment. Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Magnus moves to amend Senate File 1567 as follows. Page 7 after line 14, insert. This is the A-12 amendment.
To the amendment, Senator Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. President. The amendment comes up. The amendment is an amendment dealing with manure digester permits. And this amendment comes about from a meeting that several of us in the Senate and the House had with the Department of Pollution Control Agency in the state of Minnesota and some of the stakeholders in the livestock industry wishing to use manure digesters to provide energy or backup power to their farms. And Mr. President, what the amendment does is it exempts the areas outside of the metropolitan area as defined in Section 473, or within cities of the first or second class from the air emission permits required for manure digesters. And Mr. President, members, when you get out into the clean, fresh air out in rural Minnesota, we ought to have some sense about some of these rules. And so, again, this amendment comes about from a meeting with the stakeholders, several of the legislators, and Department of Pollution Control. Thank you.
Further discussion on the A-12 amendment. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, if Senator Magnus would yield.
Senator Magnus will yield.
Senator Magnus, this seems like a big deal, kind of coming up on the Senate floor, exempting manure digesters completely from air emission permit requirements. Talked about the fresh air out in the great grand countryside of beautiful Minnesota. I think you want to keep your air nice and fresh. I'm grateful that you're not exempting manure digesters from air emission permit requirements in my neighborhood, but you know, I just drove out to Granite Falls yesterday, and it was a beautiful drive, and the air was fresh and pure and wonderful, and it was great to enjoy. I worry that that drive wouldn't have been so enjoyable. Can you tell me why you're bringing this forward? You said common sense, but what is the level of emission that occurs from manure digesters? I don't even know, but this seems like a pretty big deal. You're exempting an entire class of process here, and we don't really have the benefit of really understanding what that means. What are we doing here? What are we introducing into the air that otherwise wouldn't be getting into our air?
Senator Magnus.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. Well, Senator Dibble, I'm introducing this today because today is National Agriculture Day, and so I wanted to make a statement to the legislature and to the state about the importance of agriculture here in the state of Minnesota today. And Senator Dibble, you've been a great champion for renewable energies in your career here, and you and I have worked for many years now on all of these issues. I'm trying to bring some sensibility to this, and we've discussed this extensively in the meeting where Chairman Engelbretson, Senator Dames, Chairman McNamara from the House Environment Committee, Representative Torkelson, the Commissioner of Pollution Control, the senior staff for the Pollution Control dealing with air permits. What's happened is when they make general rules here to protect the air quality here in the metropolitan area under the Clean Air Act, they also encapsulate some of the rural areas also, where we don't have those same needs. And I'm glad you got out, Senator Dibble, to visit our area of Southwest Minnesota. And I think you'll see that it is different than here in the metropolitan area. And the one-size rules don't fit all. And that was a significant part of our discussion. The Pollution Control Agency understands that we need to support renewable sources of energy, but they do also understand that the rules that are put in place many cases prohibit much common sense in moving forward, and that's why we presented this amendment.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Magnus, indeed, you too have been a champion of good renewable energy, clean, renewable, sustainable energy. It's a good thing. I worry about the clean part here now. No form of energy is without some impact, and we all want to be united in that goal. And I want to support you in making sure we're making use of farm products, farm byproducts, generating biofuels, using the wind, using the sun, making sure we're pursuing that shared goal of clean, renewable, sustainable, homegrown forms of energy. And I didn't hear an answer to my question. Heard a lot about folks who have a keen interest in ag issues talking to each other, and hear about folks who might be keeping a pretty sharp eye on public health impacts and air quality impacts and those sorts of things. I have literally no other written piece of paper, no data, no perspective from someone outside of an ag interest who might know a little bit more about what we're talking about. This is what committee process is for. We bring these ideas forward to committee and they get a full airing, a full vetting, no pun intended. We understand the impact and the consequence. I heard you restate your speech, your first speech in favor of the idea, but I didn't hear an answer to my question. I'm very concerned. Oh, here I'm getting some data here, but I don't have time to read it or process it, and that's the problem with bringing what sounds like a fairly significant proposal, simply exempting manure digesters from air quality permitting. That sounds like a pretty big deal to me. I'd like to know a whole lot more about it before I'm comfortable voting for something that's a couple sentences long, but is a dramatic change to how we're treating a particular industrial process. Mr. Chair, I'd like to request a roll call vote on this amendment.
Roll call has been requested and granted. Senator Higgins.
Are you president or chair right now?
President.
Sorry. You'd think after all this time I'd actually remember that, but I don't. I apologize. Was just quickly clicking on some links at the Department of Agriculture, and they have a page on manure digesters. And I'm wondering if Senator Magnus would yield to a question or two.
Senator Magnus will yield.
Thank you. So the manure digesters are also sometimes called anaerobic digesters. That's correct, right? And they collect the manure and convert it to energy. I believe that's correct. So Senator Magnus, could you tell me a little bit about the digester itself? Is it enclosed usually? Is it an open operation where air emissions go right up into the air? Is it self-contained? Tell us a little bit about how it works. If I remember right, I saw one of these at the, I want to say, Hobbinschild Farm years ago on possibly an LCMR tour. But if you could just tell us more about how this actually works, I'd appreciate it.
Senator Magnus.
Well, Senator Higgins, I'll do my best to describe how we're solving the manure issue here on the Senate floor. But you're right, they're not indoor, they're outside, they are enclosed in the digester. And folks, I don't want it to be left to the impression to people's minds here that we are exempting digesters from regulation, because we're not. You know, you have lots of regulations the Pollution Control Agency has. All I'm doing with this amendment is asking that the same air standards that were put in place for Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Rochester are protected. It's just that the digesters are exempted when they're in rural areas. And so the way the digesters work, a brief background on this is put manure in from facilities instead of spreading it out onto the soil, put this in to the manure digester. It goes through the anaerobic digesting process, as you mentioned, Senator Higgins, and from that you get methane, which is what you're going to have with manure. That's why it has this great smell out there. Many times that, through no other recourse, is flashed off. Not exactly the right thing we want to do for our air quality either. So we're trying to find ways to capture that and reuse that and put it through the energy system to supply energy for these farms. So I hope that helps a little bit.
Mr. President, one more question.
Senator Higgins.
Senator Magnus, I grew up on a farm, and I know well that smell of money, as my dad used to call it. Can you tell me, do the methane digesters smell? Is there an odor that the farm next door would hear or would smell, or somebody driving by would smell? Can you give us some information on that?
Senator Magnus.
You know, Senator Higgins, I can't, because I don't have the facts in hand with me to explain what is emitted from those. But I know, I'm a farmer myself and have livestock all my life. I know what we have on the other side of it. But I think through the digesting process, the anaerobic digesting process, certainly you have elements that are captured in that process to produce energy, and that's what we're looking for, trying to do the best we can to handle a manure situation. So sorry I can't give you a better, more detailed answer today, Senator, because I just don't have it. So.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, I stand in support of Senator Magnus's amendment. I am not a farmer, but I do live in farm country. I've got fields all around my house. And it's interesting that we're debating manure on the Senate floor. But I will tell you, in my district, manure is the smell of money in my district. And it's a big part of our economy. We've got two big economies in my district. It's farming and entertainment and tourism. And so I would like to see that we can make our small farmers be as efficient as they can. Manure is a part of life in rural Minnesota. We expect to smell manure on our fields. I drive past fields every single day in the spring and in the fall and in the summer, and we know we're going to smell manure. We've been doing it for centuries, and this bill will help our farmers deal with something they have to deal with no matter what. So I would urge everyone to take a yes vote on this amendment.
Further discussion on the A-12 amendment?
Mr. President.
Excuse me, but I saw Senator McGuire stand first. Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Magnus, if you would yield for a question, please. Thank you.
He will yield.
Senator Magnus, so I'm looking at your amendment, and I just heard you say that you're not sure what the air emissions are going to be, but you want to exempt them from the air emission permit process. Could you tell me again why you think that they should be exempt when we're not even actually sure what we're dealing with here in the emissions process?
Senator Magnus.
Well, Senator McGuire, I said I don't have the statistics at hand here right now to tell you what the emissions are coming out of this, so I can't. You know, I wish I could give this to you, but this was a long topic of discussion when we met with the Pollution Control Agency over this, because there is a lot of frustration from the agency that they recognize that these air emission standards were put in place to protect, under the Clean Air Act, were put in place to protect the cities of the first class in Rochester. But in doing this, they issued a broad ruling that covered the whole state. And the sense about this is that there's not too many manure digesters included in the cities of the first class in Rochester. So we wanted to exempt the rest of the state from the provisions of the Clean Air Act for the air emission permit, excuse me, for digesters, and not have that fall under the same air permit rules that the cities of the first class in Rochester would have. I hope I'm making some sense, Senator. I know it's, I wish I had the numbers at hand here, but I just don't. I'm sorry about that.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. President, and I think Senator Megan is this. This just makes it clear why we do have a committee process. We have a process so that we can ask these kinds of questions of people that testify, and we actually know what we're dealing with here. We don't know what these emissions are, and so we're wanting to exempt them from a permitting process where we'll actually know that information. So I'm very nervous about this amendment and think we should not put this on without knowing more information, which would be part of a committee process.
Senator Newman, I have three in line, Senator Newman, Marty, and then Stumpf. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a quick word, members, that it wasn't too many years ago when there were dairy and beef farms every quarter of a mile throughout the farming area of Minnesota. That has really drastically changed over the last couple of decades, and now what we have are rather large dairy farms and rather large beef producing farms out in rural Minnesota. And I can tell you, having grown up and lived in the rural Minnesota my entire life, I really do not see a problem with air emissions insofar as the amendment that Senator Magnus is offering. And moreover, I would remind you that the dairy industry and the beef industry in Minnesota is vitally important to our economy. And when we are dealing with dairy and beef, we are literally talking a multi-billion dollar a year industry and jobs and what is best for Minnesota. So I very strongly support Senator Magnus's amendment. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Marty.
Mr. President, I was going to go back to Senator Dibble's exchange with Senator Magnus at the beginning of this, and Senator Dibble asked why we're bringing this up today, and he says it's Ag Day, and Senator Magnus, I think you said, I want to make a statement of support of agriculture, and that's a good thing to do, but we're not making statements here. We're passing laws, and we are exempting, without any clear indication, what would be covering the manure digester permits. And I'm really concerned that we're just adding on more of this bill. It seems to get thicker and thicker with more exemptions to this or exemptions to that. In this case, all we're doing here is saying, well, we're going to totally remove these from this regulatory process. And Senator Magnus is assuring us that there are plenty of other processes to cover this, but that's why you put the bills through committee. I'm not on the Environment Committee anymore, but I do know that this deserves that kind of discussion. So I understand why you want to make a statement on behalf of agriculture on Agriculture Day, but it's not necessarily pro-agriculture to totally exempt these from the regulations and saying that, well, because you worded the amendment such that this wouldn't apply in the metro area means that you're going to have different standards here. Yeah, that's obvious, but the question is, what are the standards? What is the regulation that goes for somebody to get a permit to do this? And it sounds to me like it may be a very great idea. I understand, I remember reading about that farm that Senator Higgins visited, the one that's doing a lot of conversion to generate their own energy from this. That's a great idea, but let's make sure it's done in a way that's safe for neighbors' health, safe for the environment. And when we talk about smells, yes, I understand the smell of it, but we have had problems, and I wanted to speak to another part of the bill later about the issue of violations with hydrogen sulfide and other yes, there are these smells, and you're going to have them on farms, but there have to be some regulations, some standards for health and safety, and that's why I strongly urge us to reject this amendment and put it through the committee process again.
Senator Stump.
Thank you, Madam, Mr. President. I think it helps to look at what exactly these digesters do. The purpose of them is to capture the gas that would normally escape and process in an anaerobic way the waste that's being generated. And right now, many of the larger dairy farms in California have those digesters in place. And I think, if anything, it should actually lower any air quality problems that are currently coming from those waste products. And I know in one of the large dairies that we had trouble with up in my area, if they would have had a waste digester in place, we would have had no problem with them. But because they had an open pit, an open pond, we had all kinds of trouble. The neighbors, when they periodically, whenever the wind would blow in their direction, they'd have all kinds of smells, and there's no way to contain it. If you have a digester, everything goes into the digester, and they try to capture that gas, and it's mainly ammonia and sulfites and those kind of things that create the smell. So by containing it, I think Senator Magnuson's amendment is a good amendment and would definitely improve the quality of the air in the surrounding areas. Plus, you capture the energy.
Senator Higgins.
Mr. President, I have another question for Senator Magnus.
He will yield.
Thank you. Senator Magnus, your amendment deals only with the state air permit. Is that correct? Not the federal one?
Senator Magnus.
Well, Senator Higgins, the air permits required, the air permit is the Environmental Protection Agency air permit. The state has to comply with the federal air emissions permit.
So Senator Higgins.
Mr. President, Senator Magnus, I don't know that the state has the authority to say that somebody doesn't have to go by federal regulations on this.
Well,
Senator Magnus.
Mr. President, and again, we're getting confused about this. The state, the federal EPA requirements govern Minneapolis, St. Paul, Rochester. When the Pollution Control Agency issued the ruling to comply with the federal EPA air emissions for those areas, they inadvertently put in all of the rural areas also. Okay? So this, in the way this is set up, by having that requirement for the rural areas, this is prohibiting prohibiting our animal industry from putting in the anaerobic digesters and manure digesters. As Senator Stump explained this, it's much better off to go through this process, have much cleaner a cleaner process, uses the emissions for energy generation. It's much cleaner. We're trying to fix a problem in the rulemaking where they were required by the federal agency, the EPA, to enact air emission standards for Minneapolis, St. Paul, Rochester, and when they put the rule out, they inadvertently included all of Minnesota in that ruling.
Senator Magnus, I'm curious about why the federal government would have put manure regulations on the cities of the first and the second class.
Senator Magnus.
They don't. As far as my knowledge is. I guess you never know what comes out of Washington. Again, these are air emission standards that these cities must comply with. To comply with the federal rules, the federal requirements under the Clean Air Act, the Pollution Control Agency issued rulemaking that encompassed the whole state. And that's a problem. And again, a result of the meeting, the Pollution Control Agency said, if we can't remedy this through the legislative actions, here we sit.
I have Senators Dibble, Ingebrigtsen, and Rosen. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, my inquiry of Senator Magnus is similar. If Senator Magnus would yield. Senator Magnus, did I correctly hear you say that under the present regimen, these manure digesters are subject to state permits, which are actually the EPA permits that the state administers?
Are you asking him to yield, Senator Dibble?
Yes, Mr. President.
Senator Magnus.
Well, Senator Dibble, if I understand your question correctly, you're asking me if the manure digester and the process is subject to the federal EPA rules. Is that what you're asking, Senator?
Senator Dibble.
Mr. President, yes, essentially that's what I'm asking.
Senator Magnus.
Well, Mr. President and Senator Dibble, actually, it's the engine that furnishes the energy that's subject to the emissions requirements. I know it's a bit confusing, but that's actually what triggers the air emissions for the EPA standards that have been enacted.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, then, Senator Magnus, do we know then if by state action, to Senator Higgins' question, I have two questions. One is to repeat Senator Higgins' questions. Do we even have the authority as the state? Because Senator Magnus, as you know, our Pollution Control Agency effectively administers the Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act. On behalf of the EPA, we have those delegated authorities, but we're tasked with doing a good job of that. And I don't know that under that delegated authority, we simply have the option or the opportunity to simply create this exemption. This is a federal authority that is granted to the states to administer, and I don't think coming with that is our ability to create exemptions. We're carrying out the federal regimen. Is that not correct, Senator Magnus?
Senator Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, Senator, not exactly, because none of the surrounding states around us have rules similar to what the Pollution Control Agency enacted for this segment. So in other words, if you have a dairy, for example, and you locate that in South Dakota, right across the border, in which we're having thousands of dairy cattle moving to, South Dakota does not have the same rules that the Pollution Control Agency put in place here for the state of Minnesota to adhere to the EPA Air Emissions Act as we do.
Senator Dibble.
Neither does Iowa, neither does Wisconsin, neither does North Dakota. And they're all subject to EPA air emission rules, but the air pollution control agencies did not enact a broad-based rule for this to cover the rural areas.
Senator Dibble.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. Senator Magnus, I don't know what the situation is in those other states. I don't know if they have delegated authority from the EPA to administer these air permits, or if they just simply chose not to you know, enact air permit requirements at the state level. I mean, we can't know. That's why we have committee hearings and we have these kinds of discussion in a committee process, and we don't bring ideas like this that may have tremendous implications for public health and environmental air quality. I mean, you know, to listen to you and Senator Stumpf's and others, it's all puppies and rainbows. We have no data, no facts. You've provided us with nothing other than reassurances that all the large ag groups are for this. Well, I'm sorry, they have an interest in this particular issue, and we haven't heard from the agency. We haven't heard from other folks who are interested in maybe some of the other perspectives, you know, and other stakeholder groups who might have a different kind of an interest. Senator Magnus, do we know that if we make this exemption, we might receive an indication from the EPA that we're not doing a good job of managing that delegated authority and have that authority taken back from us? I mean, that does happen to states when they don't actually use their delegated authority wisely. And then do we know, Senator Magnus, if that happens, maybe we'd be sailing against the intent that Senator Ingebrigtsen has articulated, which is speedier process for pollution permitting. If that happens, Senator Magnus, if we are shown to be irresponsible with our delegated authority from the EPA, they'll simply yank back the permitting process. It'll all go to Chicago, and it'll be slowed down significantly. That might be an implication of this amendment. Have we considered that?
Senator Magnus.
Well, first, Senator Dibble, I have to correct some of your comments that you're pointing this out as just large animal agriculture producers. I believe that's what you said, Senator. Is that correct, Senator Dibble? Would you yield?
Senator Dibble.
Mr. President, I did not use that characteristic. I simply said I was simply reflecting your own comments that you wanted to make a big show for the agricultural groups who are here at the Capitol today.
Senator Magnus.
Well, Senator Dibble, I clearly heard you say large. This is for the large agricultural producers. I clearly heard you say that in your statements, and that's not the case. This is not big agriculture trying to steamroll regulations here in the state of Minnesota. Again, several stakeholders, several legislators met with the Pollution Control Commissioner and his staff. They told us every state has delegated authority just as we do. They also said none of the surrounding states have rules put in place as they put in that cover these in the rural areas of the state. So members, we can continue to support renewable energy. We continue to support all sizes of livestock operations being able to do this, or we can see them continue to head across the borders. Because we don't have, we are trying to correct an oversight in a rulemaking authority. Senator Ingebrigtsen, would you yield? Question.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, you were at the meeting. Would you tell the body what your understanding of what the Pollution Control Agency's support for this amendment is?
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. President. To Senator Magnus's point and members, yes, we did have a very extensive meeting with both the PCA and the DNR. Administration members were there with about this very issue. They're certainly in support of this. Senator Higgins, I believe, I think toured the Hobenscheid farm, is that right? Yeah, and it would pertain to them as well. So she's, I think, fairly familiar with what we're talking about here. And I can't help but talk a little bit about the process. I think Senator Magnus has done a tremendous job of explaining what's going on here. I think it's pretty straightforward. But as far as the process of going back to committee hearings, this and that, I mean, we've had several amendments on this particular bill today that didn't actually go to the committee for amendment discussion. It was the administration that brought those forward, just like this. The administration is certainly okay with this as well, and Senator Dibble understands it. Senator Marty understands the process on the floor, so it's very similar to that. The Senator Bach's amendment was not vetted totally in committee, but it was talked about. I mean, that's what happens around here. We get administration and PCA and the DNR together on these issues. We wouldn't bring these forward and put them on a bill unless it was going to happen.
I mean, it's just not going to happen. And the process has been gone through here, and we're talking about some huge farms that are looking at the possibilities if some of these regulations, and this one certainly seems to be a common sense situation here. And if that's going to keep somebody from running across the border with a $3,000 head operation going to another state, because we're the only state that ties this particular issue up, that doesn't seem like it very smart. So, members, I support this amendment. It's a good amendment. It's a good for Minnesota. It's certainly good for the agricultural community. And again, it pertains to rural Minnesota, not the metro.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. President. Responding to Senator Ingebrigtsen. Senator Magnus has not done a tremendous job explaining what this implications of this amendment are. He has simply repeated time and again that this is common sense and this is a good thing, and if you're not for it, then somehow you're against renewable energy. If you're not for it, somehow you're against the agricultural economy in greater Minnesota, and that's just simply not true. And Senator Magnus knows that I support the economy of the state, and everyone here supports the renewable energy future for this state. So I just want to categorically reject those arguments. I'll also say about the amendment that Senator Bach offered, that Senator Saxhog originated. We had actually a fairly good discussion about that prior to coming onto the floor today. The agency was also out in the hallway talking to all of us about it. We had some fairly thorough discussion. We had the environmental organizations aware of this amendment, and we had some ability to interact with them and gain their reaction to that particular amendment. This amendment has, and additionally, I'll say that material was provided that helped us understand the Saxhog-Bach agency amendment that was brought forward. Senator Magnus's amendment, which simply eliminates air permitting for all manure digesters as well as the electrical generation equipment, just kind of came sailing in and landed like a thunk out of the blue in the middle of this chamber with no data and no information from any stakeholder group whatsoever, with tremendous implications for public health, for environmental air quality, and for our ability to effectively manage and administer our delegated EPA authority. So, you know, I may be in love with this amendment. Who knows? But I'd like the chance to date it a little bit and perhaps fall in love with it over a period of time. It may be the best thing since sliced bread, but I have no way of knowing that. So with that, I simply can't vote for an amendment like this.
Senator Ingebrigtsen and then Senator Rosen. Then we're moving towards a vote.
Thank you, Mr. President. To that point, Senator Dibble, I wasn't privy to that conversation that Senator Bach and the administration had in the hallway with regards to that particular amendment. But as you know, that's how things work around here. You know, there becomes a workability of trust amongst members here, and when the administration is willing to go ahead with something that makes sense to the general body here, we go ahead and do that by way of amendments. So I think that process worked. This is really, really no different. So again, I stand in support of this.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I also stand in support of this. And I just want to just make a couple comments. Number one, and back in 2003, after my first session, I realized that there was a huge disconnect in the metro and the rural knowledge of agriculture and the economy, especially out in rural Minnesota. And I invited the freshman class to come down to my district. And as you know, there's quite a few of them that were from the donut ring, from the suburban area, and they all came down. And we went to the school, we had a city, Senator Nina was there, Senator Han, Senator Jungbauer, Senator Ortman, went on and on. And we had a very good meeting with the city administrators, schools, and then I took them to a 1,200 sow unit. I did not know that it was shower in, shower out. That's the only thing I didn't know. It's kind of funny. But everybody had wet hair after that. But it was real. What I'm trying to say here, Mr. President and members, it was a very, very good exercise in everybody getting on the same page. Lori Sturdivant even came down with us. And to get the correct information out about agriculture. And I agree with Senator Ingebrigtsen. There is a level of trust here. This is a good amendment. So I am personally going to invite Senator Dibble, Senator Marty, Senator Higgins, Senator McGuire, anybody who would like to come out. I would love to take you to a 1,200 unit sow unit, and we'll shower together. No problem.
or whatever. But that's the key to this place. This is not a partisan issue, folks, okay?
Roll call has been requested and granted. Secretary will take the roll on the A-12 amendment. All senators voting who desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 49 ayes and 12 nays, the amendment does prevail. Further discussion on Senate File 1567. Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have an A-14 amendment.
Senator Tomasoni offers the A-14 amendment. Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Tomasoni moves to amend Senate File 1567 as follows. Page 3 after line 34, insert. This is the A-14 amendment.
To the A-14, Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, what the A-14 amendment does is put things in order regarding wild rice standards to the way they've been for the last 40 years. And what I'm talking about is that we have a wild rice standard in the state of Minnesota that says that water emissions from any kind of operation, whether it's mining operation, a wastewater treatment plant, a manufacturing facility that goes into wild rice areas, has to have less than 10 parts per million of sulfur in them. And members, this is something that was put into rule way back in 1972, and it comes from some individuals. I don't even know if they were experiments back in 1941, and I don't know that it's ever been proven whether or not it's a science. I don't know if it's ever been proven that it is a thing that is best for wild rice standards, but the fact of the matter is that since 1972, there is no permits that have been issued based on this particular standard. And mining operations have continued the entire time, and wild rice has grown the entire time. And so to say suddenly now that all of a sudden our mining industry, our iron mining industry, is going to be dependent on whether or not wild rice can grow in 10 parts per million is putting a very, very black cloud over the top of a mining industry that has been the basis of America's success for many, many years. Members, we last year passed the bill to do a study on this particular thing, and I realize that we're waiting for the results of this to see if 10 is the right number. However, we were just informed as a result of some new permits that were issued at Keewatin Taconite, which is a U.S. steel operation, that the new permits will have to comply with this wild rice standard. Here's the implications, members. Keewatin Taconite has a manufacturing line for pellets that is right now being considered by U.S. Steel to be reopened. U.S. Steel is considering to do about $500 million of investment into this current line. They have been in the permitting process for at least 4 years. They've spent $20 million on the permitting process, and I'd like to actually thank the environmental agencies that were responsible for issuing the permits, because they did issue the water and air permits, and the project could go forward. The catch is that as a result of these new permits,
TTAC will have to adhere to the standard of 10 for sulfate emissions coming out of the plant, and they have to do this regardless of whether or not they decide to do the new line. Now, U.S. Steel is in the process of making a decision. Do we invest $500 million in a plant on the Iron Range, create 500 construction jobs, and 100 permanent jobs at the plant, produce 2.5 million tons more of taconite on the Iron Range, and risk having to invest another $250 million in a wastewater treatment plant in order to get our sulfate emissions down to 10 for purposes of wild rice, or do we scrap the whole project? And the part of it that is, or do we scrap the whole project, is that they may have to do the $250 wastewater treatment plant. Now, we just found out the other day, which is why I have this amendment here, that regardless of their decision, they still, according to the new permits, are going to have to get their emissions down to 10. This has implications for the entire iron mining industry. The implications are that every time there's a new permit issued, that they will now have to make sure that they invest an extra $250 million in a wastewater treatment plant that we don't even know is capable of getting the emissions down to 10 parts per million. And so, members, what this says is that if you have been mining under permits prior to 2008, that future permits will be exempt from the wild rice standard, and I'm confident that that this will not have bad implications for wild rice, because wild rice has been growing and been harvested in these areas all the years that the permits were never issued and never paid any attention to the wild rice standard. And incidentally, the level of sulfates in drinking water is 250. And so, members, I think this is a common sense solution to what could turn into be a huge problem, because I would hate to see the entire mining industry close down as a result of a standard that it was never enforced for the last 40 years, and then all of a sudden it's starting to be enforced. So I'd appreciate your support.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. President. And members, I arise to reject this A14 amendment. Let me explain a little bit why. Last year, as you remember, tirelessly we went through the process with regards to the non-ferrous mining, where I know Senator Bach and his areas for certainly was concerned about it, and we were able to put together the money for the study, the wild rice study, actually $1.5 million, and that study is just now starting, and I'm not sure exactly when it's going to be done, but we're just in the process of moving forward. And Senator Tomassoni came to me with this earlier, and I said there's just been too much work, too much process has gone into, you know, discussion has gone into this, and a $250 million price tag certainly is concerning to him, I'm sure, with the mining industry. But I do remember the figure of $450 million for the non-ferrous folks to get that standard down to the 10 parts per million was a figure that I've been hearing, and so they certainly have concerns as well, and that's why we had this discussion last year. So, members, this would be a step backwards, and I would like to work with Senator Tomassoni on this, and I would respectfully ask him to withdraw the amendment, and we'll move forward.
Senator Tomassoni.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Ingebrigtsen, I appreciate those comments. I want you to understand that this is not about a $250 million wastewater treatment plant. This is about the potential for the entire mining industry to be shut down. And the amendment itself, what it does is it says that if you've been mining and you've had permits to mine before January 1st of 2008, you can continue to get new permits and continue to mine regardless of what the wild rice standard is. I appreciate the cooperation that we had out of you last year with the non-ferrous. This issue came to light just recently, and we are very, very concerned about what could happen next. I think there has to be some type of a solution that gets fixed here, because I don't know what the results of this test are going to be, but I'm very concerned that every time a permit is issued from here on in regarding the mining industry, that someone is going to say, well, what about the wild rice?
And I'm very concerned about the wild rice, yeah, but I also know that the wild rice has flourished. I also know that I have a wild rice farmer sitting next to me who actually puts phosphates and sulfates into his wild rice so that he can fertilize it and grow it better. And so I'm wondering what the science is that we're adhering to. I am also concerned that what's going to end up happening in the very near future is that we are going to have to, for every permit, for every manufacturing facility, for every wastewater treatment plant in the state, for every ethanol plant that's in the state, that we are going to have to require a new wastewater treatment plant to treat water for sulfates to get it down to 10 parts per million or whatever the new study comes up with. And members, the cost of the state will be astronomical. It will not be sustainable. It will be impossible to do. We will not be able to adhere to the standard. And somewhere along the way, we have to figure out, is it this important that we actually eliminate jobs, eliminate entire industries because of a standard that we have never ever adhered to, that we really don't know what the science behind is, and that really has had no effect on the production of wild rice. So, well, Senator Ingebretson, I know you cooperated with us last year, and I'm looking forward to working with you again in the very near future. I'm going to withdraw the amendment, but I do want to make sure that we discuss this and we possibly, as we go forward, maybe even in the conference committee, that we talk about some type of a solution in this particular problem that we are running into. So thank you for your understanding.
Senator Tomasoni withdraws the A14 amendment. Senator Peterson.
Mr. President, I rise to offer the A9 amendment.
Senator Peterson offers the A9 amendment. Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Peterson moves to amend Senate File 1567 as follows. Page 2, delete line, section 3 and insert. This is the A9 amendment.
To the A9 amendment, Senator Peterson.
Yeah. Mr. President, this is just simply some compromise language from some of the state agencies' language that's included in the House bill, and simply want to make that correction to speed the process on this bill.
Any discussion on the A9 amendment? Senator Marty.
Mr. President, the language in the bill right now is eliminating the conservation rate structure, and what this is doing is sort of replacing it with an encouragement. So this is at least, it's better than what's in the bill if we want water conservation.
Are you asking Senator Peterson to yield?
Mr. President, I'm asking for clarification. I just looked at it quickly. It looks like it's, I wanted to get clarification of what you've got here.
Senator Peterson.
Yes, Mr. President, and Senator Marty, I would describe this bill as providing some permissive language and allowing it rather than creating a hammer and requiring it. That's accurate.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would Senator Peterson yield?
Senator Peterson will yield.
Thank you. Senator Peterson, is the reason for this amendment so that you can make it like the House language, because otherwise it would go to conference committee and then you could actually have a discussion about this with other people, talking about it. It's making me nervous that we have all these amendments that have these implications where we're not able to have a discussion about it with outside parties who actually may know more about all of these things. So would that take this, if we pass this, that would make this language identical then, and then this would not be a discussion piece in the conference committee. Is that correct?
Senator Peterson.
Mr. President, that is accurate.
Yep. Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I encourage members to not support this amendment because it's a large amendment. It's a long amendment, and it's got a, it may have some implications that we may want to have a discussion in conference committee where we can actually bring other people in to talk about what the ramifications of it are. Thank you.
Further discussion on the A9 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. Amendment prevails. Further discussion on Senate File 1567, Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have the A15 amendment.
Senator Higgins offers the A-15 amendment. Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Higgins moves to amend Senate File 1567 as follows, page 1, line 19, reinstate. This is the A-15 amendment.
To the amendment, Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Mr. President. This amendment reinstates the language that is stricken in several places relating to the phrase substantially permitted, substantially completed permit application, and restores the original language. We had a lot of discussion in various committees about these permit applications, and the process as it works now is that the applicant and the agency will work together in a lot of pre-application meetings to make sure that everything is substantially complete before the application is actually applied for. You know what I mean. And that helps us achieve the 150-day goal of having the permits in hand. The language in the bill takes away that substantially completed language, so now if somebody wanted to go in and put nothing more than their name, address, and phone number and the name of the project, it would start the 150-day clock running. And I don't think that's in anybody's best interest to have a substantially incomplete application before us. So I'd point out that it is the same amendments in two places, one dealing with the DNR, one dealing with the Pollution Control Agency, and I'd ask for your support.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. And members, I rise against this amendment. And what we're doing is we're going back to square one here. We're not moving forward. We're not moving forward at all. We're not getting the agencies to respond to the proposers, and that is a huge part of this bill, a huge part of what the business and the MPCA and the DNR have come forward and said that they're willing to do that, and they're already doing remarkable things when it comes to permits from House File Number 1. This is just another step in that direction of even streamlining it even more. So, members, I would ask you for not to not support this amendment.
Further discussion on the A-15 amendment, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I support the Higgins amendment. To Senator Ingebrigtsen's characterization that this amendment means we don't move forward, it actually means if the bill stays in place with the language as is proposed, we move backwards. We move backwards in Minnesota in our ability to really effectively administer environmental permitting and the process. We've made tremendous progress in the last year. Everyone is super excited about the executive order and House File 1 and all of the progress that's been made. And the simple fact is that we've seen 99.9% of all these processes come in ahead of schedule. Tremendous progress made in shortening time frames and streamlining and everything that everyone seems to support. What this simply does is simply allows an applicant to game the system and to come in and, you know, kind of do a mediocre job of applying for a permit and simply letting the clock start ticking. And it substantially tilts the entire process in favor of folks who aren't interested in coming forward in good faith, telling the agency, telling the public exactly what they propose to do, and working with an agency and an administration, I think, who have really struck a very, very cooperative posture with respect to these set of issues, these processes, balancing the interests of environment, balancing the interests of business, doing work at the speed of business. So not only do we not move forward, we start moving backwards, and we start harming what had been a positive moment that we started off the last session with, that everyone was so excited, oh my gosh, we're going to have this great bipartisan series of efforts that are going to set the tone, and everyone was super excited at the outset. You know, it'd be nice to return to those warm feelings at the very, very beginning of the session last year when everyone seemed to enjoy the success of passage of that particular bill. This simply flips that around and puts that on its ear, and that would be a pity if this language of Senator Ingebretson's were to prevail.
Further discussion on the A-15, Senator Ingebretson.
Thank you, Mr. President, and to Senator Dibble's points. Frankly, I guess I can't speak for only one of 67 in this body, but I think I can speak fairly clearly that the administration, along with all parties involved last year, did start out on a good note. The governor, through his travels throughout the states of Minnesota, was learning that there was problems with the permitting process, and that he was going to bring that back to St. Paul after being elected, like a lot of us, and work on that. And that has come true. And frankly, I actually think it does feel kind of good. I think Minnesotans want to see a little bit of camaraderie here. They want to see us work together on some of these issues. And yes, I'm sorry if you didn't feel good about that last year, about the feel-good issue going on here with all the members and all the body here, but I just think it's certainly, I mean, the PCA came and testified to our committee that this process worked real well last year. And our committee, I think, has been putting a lot of time and effort into this, and moving forward seems to be the right direction. And the administration seems to think that as well. So again, I would stand against this amendment and would continue to enjoy the bipartisan efforts that we're experiencing here in the Senate and move forward with business and jobs in the state of Minnesota.
Further discussion, and we're moving towards a vote here. Senator Lurie.
Thank you, Mr. President. I rise in favor of the A-15 and urge members to support it as well. I mean, I think that I really did applaud the work of the governor and of the legislature in moving Senate File 1 last year, and I believe it has done a lot of good. And that 150 days is a substantial improvement and really helped a lot of businesses have the confidence to move forward with some of their plans. But what is required in Senate File 1 is that in order to start the 150-day clock, the business proposing their initiative needs to submit a substantially complete permit application. That's all that's requested. And that starts a 150-day clock, and that's a good thing, and it's a good step forward, and it really sped up a lot of the timelines that we've had historically in the state of Minnesota. What this is doing is striking the words "substantially complete," and I just like to point out that an applicant can submit, I guess, what would be a substantially incomplete application and begin that 150-day clock. And I think that's unfair. It does really allow that applicant to game the system. And I think there are many really positive aspects of this bill, and I would like to support this bill, but I'm going to have a hard time if an applicant is able to submit a substantially incomplete permit application and start that clock. So I hope that this amendment does go on and the rest of this bill is able to be put into law, and I think we will have done good work. So please, members, support the A-15 amendment.
Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A-15 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Motion amendment does not prevail. Division has been called for. All those in favor of the A-15 amendment, please rise and stand at your desk. You may be seated. All opposed to the A-15 amendment, please stand at your desk. may be seated. The amendment does not prevail. Further discussion on Senate File 1567. Seeing none. Senator Marty.
Mr. President, the bill, we haven't talked about a number of the provisions in the bill, and I wanted to at least raise some concerns about Section 4, where we're doubling the permits for feedlot disposal systems. And last year, the legislature basically exempted a whole lot of them, a lot of the bigger ones that don't have the NPDES permits. And now we are saying that for those operations that don't have that, we're going to extend the permit life from 5 to 10 years. That may save somebody a little bit of a hassle, a little bit of money. But I want to say that some of these operations, first of all, the PCA staff is so light that they're now inspecting about 0.8% a year, which means they'll inspect all of the operations if we wait 110, 20 years. There's not a lot of inspections going on because the PCA doesn't have the staff for it. And when there's a bad actor, because we're talking about most of the operations are decent operations, but once in a while there's a bad actor. Remember Valadco in Renville County and the XL Dairy in Marshall County? And they're really huge problems. I think there was one a couple years ago, 125,000 gallons of manure spilled into a creek. Those are huge operations that we ought to have a chance to check out every once in a while. And the reason I mentioned this 5-year issue is a problem, switching it to 10 years, is the one in Marshall County a few years ago. We actually had a health committee hearing on the issue, because the hydrogen sulfide standard of the state is, I think it's 30 parts per billion is the acceptable standard, that you cannot exceed that more than a couple of times a week. 50 parts a billion, you can't exceed for more than a half hour twice a year. This Valad, the one up in the XL Dairy, health department urged people to move out of their houses right away because it was over 1,000. When the standard is you can't exceed 50 parts per billion twice a year, they had emissions over 1,000 parts per billion. It was repeated, and people were moving out of their homes nearby at health department's recommendation. And the only way the PCA was able to shut down the thing was to wait till their permit expired. They fought, and it got tied up in courts and got tied up in everything else in the regulatory process. The only way they shut down this bad actor was waiting until the permit expired. And if we make it 10 years, we're going to make it much more offensive. We already talked a little bit through Senator Higgins' amendment about her unsuccessful amendment about taking away the substantially complete, and I think Senator Lori's comments were especially good. In effect, we're forcing them to go through substantially incomplete applications, and it's a two-way street. The PCA has to work fast on things, but so does the permit applicant. And the PCA actually sent a letter to us on this, I notice, in which they say it will move us backward and add time to the permitting process, because the PCA, well, they'll look worse because they won't meet 150 days as often, because they're going to have incomplete permits to work with. But that will extend the time, not shorten it for people. It's just going to make the PCA look bad, which is why I think some people would like it to pass. And then finally, I have real concerns about the provision in which we have the permit application professionals, in effect, writing the permits. And Senator Magnus, I think it was your amendment earlier on today where, I think your first amendment, where we took out the provision right now on page 5, a permit application submitted by one of these permit application professionals who are paid by the applicant, not by the PCA, they shall be deemed complete and approved. Under the bill as you brought it here today, it said unless the terms and condition submitted by the applicant are clearly erroneous under statute or rule. You took that out, so even if they are clearly erroneous, they must be approved, deemed complete and approved. And I think that's a huge problem. This bill is not replacing bad regulatory system with good regulatory system. It's simply forcing things through the process with no regulatory process here. And I think it's outrageous. I'm disappointed in the bill. You got a provision on page 7 where, unless federal law prohibits it, a person can begin construction before they get a construction permit. Well, earlier in the bill, Senator Ingebrigtsen, earlier in the process, a provision where somebody could sue the agency, and I'm sure that's coming back next year. So somebody starts constructing an operation that they're not allowed to, that they haven't gotten permission to do. If PCA steps in and says, no, we're going to deny the permit, then they're going to sue them for all the costs. It's really putting the cart before the horse. This is a terrible bill. It's moving in the wrong direction. I think that the governor's executive order last year moved things forward, trying to smooth out the process. There are a couple of good provisions in here that may help with that. But bottom line is we're racing things through so where you can file basically incomplete applications and they have to move fast on these. We're saying that we're extending the permitting on these 5-year permits for 10 years, even when we can't get the bad actors out of business under current law. I think there are some terrible problems with this. I strongly urge members to reject the bill.
Secretary will give Senate File 1567 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1567, a bill for an act relating to environment, third reading.
Senator Senjum.
Madam President, I'm looking around to see if there's any further debate on the bill. If there would be, I think at this point, since we've consumed so much of the committee time, that we would recess until 6 o'clock and come back and finish the bill. I think, in fairness to the committee, in fairness to a lot of people that have probably come to the Capitol today as witnesses, I think we need to do that. And at this point, and I'm not sure if there's other debate, we can finish the bill. If there are people that want to debate, fine, we can come back and do that. Otherwise, and maybe I can, Senator Bach, would you be aware of any further debate? Okay. Okay, if that is not the case, then, Madam Chair, why don't we proceed?
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 1567. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 47 ayes and 16 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Remaining under our motions and resolutions, we'll take up the addendum for today. Moving to the third order of business, messages from the House. The Secretary will read the message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House refuses to concur in the Senate amendments to House File Number 382, a bill for an act relating to commerce. The House respectfully requests that a conference committee of three members be appointed thereon. Hoppe, Mazarol, and Simon have been appointed as such committee on the part of the House. House File 382 is herewith transmitted to the Senate with a request that the Senate appoint a like committee. Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that the Senate accede to the request of the House for a conference committee on House File 382 and that a conference committee of three members be appointed by the subcommittee on conference committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Secretary will read the next motion.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House refuses to concur in the Senate amendments to House File Number 1870, a bill for an act relating to education. The House respectfully requests that a conference committee of five members be appointed thereon. Peterson B., Downey, Kelly, Woodard, and Mariani have been appointed as such committee on the part of the House. House File Number 1870 is herewith transmitted to the Senate with a request that the Senate appoint a like committee. Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Senator Wolf.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that the Senate accede to the request of the House for a conference committee on House File Number 1870 and that a conference committee of five members be appointed by the subcommittee on conference committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
To that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving to the fifth order of business, the reports of committees. Senator Senjum.
Madam President, I move that the committee reports printed in the addendum be adopted.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving to the sixth order of business on the addendum, the second reading of Senate bills. There are several printed on page four. Second reading. Moving to motions and resolutions, Senator Senjum. Senator Senjum, would you like to move for a brief recess?
Madam President, I would like to move for a very brief recess for the purposes of appointing a conference committee.
To Senator Senjum's motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. We are in recess. Senator Senjum.
Madam President, I would move the body back to order and would ask, is there a committee report at the desk?
Yes, there is, Senator Senjum. To tell you. Secretary will report the
Senator Senjum from the Subcommittee on Conference Committee recommends that the following senators be and they hereby are appointed as Conference Committee on House File Number 1870. Senators Wolf, Daley, Cruz, Olson, and Bonhoff. Senator Senjum moves that the foregoing appointments be approved.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving to the 13th order of business, announcements of Senate interest. I do have several excuses. Without objection, the following senators will be excused. Senator Dames all day, Senator Ortman all day, Senator Roebling from 11:30 to 12 noon, Senator Sieben and Harrington and Kielash from 1 o'clock to 1:40, and Senator Olson from 1:30 to the end of session. Without objection, they are excused. Further announcements of Senate interest. Senator Cohen.
Madam President, I just want to make note, in the aftermath of this week's sadness with the passage and service yesterday of Senator Kubley, yesterday we also lost former Senator Gary DeCramer. I don't think there are a lot of us in this body who served with Gary. He served for 10 years, served out of the Marshall area. More recently, he's been a significant professor at the Humphrey Institute and moved to the cities. Gary was a senator who bridged a lot of different parts of the Senate. He represented a rural area, but was quite comfortable in working with many of us from the urban areas. He worked on a number of issues relative to agriculture, but was very comfortable working with other issues involving what might have been viewed as more traditionally metropolitan or urban kinds of issues. More than that, he was an individual of exceeding courtesy, honesty, worked in a bipartisan way throughout his 10 years, and the folks at the Humphrey will miss him. Those of us who served with him miss him. He was a very significant asset to this place and to the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Senator. Further announcements, Senator Gimsey.
Thank you, Madam President. And the Senate Transportation Committee will meet starting at 2 o'clock.
Further announcements, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. The Senate Judiciary Committee will meet promptly at 2:15 today.
Senator Reinert.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, just a reminder that the next step in the Legislative Audit Commission topic selection process has come out. We met last week and took 90-some topics, narrowed them down to 14, but now we need your input on those 14. So if you'd take a minute to fill out your survey, you can select up to four, and then we'll get that narrowed down to the 4 to 6 that the commission will take a look at. Thank you.
Senator Senjum.
Madam President, members, just perhaps a reminder, today is Rochester Day. There'll be events this evening at the Wellstone Center. I hope that as many of you as possible can attend that. And with that, Madam President, the business of the day being concluded, I would now move that we adjourn until Monday, March 12th at 12 noon.
Senator Senjum has moved that the Senate adjourn until Monday, March 12th at noon. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The Senate is adjourned.